DW Africa Link.
Today, let's dive into one of Africa's digital challenges, the fight against disinformation and misinformation. From elections to public health, false narratives are spreading faster than ever with real world impacts. We want to explore how communities, journalists, and tech platforms work to cut through the noise, empower citizens, and uphold truth in a digital age. But remember, this is not just a conversation for us. You, as part of our community, play a crucial role in this fight. Your awareness and vigilance can significantly influence the direction of our discussions and the fight against disinformation. It is a conversation you wouldn't want to miss. My name is Josie Mahachi. Welcome to Africa Link, the podcast that connects you to the stories that matter from Africa.
Africa Link, every weekday here on DW.
Disinformation campaigns across Africa have surged fourfold since 2022, posing a grave threat to democracy and stability. These coordinated attacks now target 39 African nations, deliberately distorting information systems to further political agendas. But in the face of this, a powerful coalition of fact-checkers in Ghana has mobilized to safeguard the upcoming elections. Let's delve deeper into this topic with Rabiu Alassane, lead fact-checker at FactSpace West Africa, and Roselina Ahi-Able, senior researcher with Dubawa Ghana, in a conversation that underscores the importance of our collective efforts in winning this critical battle for truth. Thank you so much for joining us here on DW Africa Link. So I'll start with you, Rabiu, as a fact checker. What is the current state of disinformation or misinformation in the West Africa and broadly across the continent?
Thank you very much, Josie. Really appreciate your inviting us here for the program. Misinformation and disinformation generally is not just a West African or, to be specific, Ghana problem. We know this has become a global problem, as we can find in the Global Risk Report of the World Economic Forum. But to respond directly to your question, there's been a number of reports that have highlighted how disinformation is gaining roots, particularly in the West African sub-region, with lots of emerging powers playing key roles in some of these disinformation campaigns. That does not discount also the fact that local actors, including politicians and central governments, are also involved in one disinformation campaign or the other to achieve very parochial interests amongst their local populations. So it's become a major problem also when we are seeing all the troubles in the Sahel regions, the destabilization and toppling of governments by military dictators. We are seeing also the increasing anti-French sentiments that are being exploited by all sorts of actors. And this points me directly to the report published by the Africa Center for Strategic Studies as it relates to mapping of disinformation in Africa. Josie.
Right. But what types of disinformation, Rabiu, are rampant, or should I say also the common sources and spread patterns?
I think the very hardcore, easy to identify ones are those being led by politicians as they try to control narratives and frame issues to suit their parochial interests and to win the hearts and minds of their populations. But beyond that, with all the stress and increasing activities of terrorists and toppling of governments in the Sahel, we are also seeing global powers trying to win favor and win the hearts and minds of the local populations. So they are also through some disinformation campaigns trying to achieve these objectives.
Right. But Rabiu, should we really only blame the governments or the leaders, because I've seen, I'll give you an example, the narrative that somebody somewhere, we don't know who, we don't know at what time or from where, just started spreading misinformation that Cameroon's president, Paul Biya, I think that's a few weeks or a month ago, had passed on. And obviously we saw the man showed up, he's alive, but the news had spread like wildfire. So should we just say the governments and the leaders are always to blame?
Obviously not. I think there are several motivations for some of the actors, both local and international, involved in disinformation campaigns. Some could be just to win over following on social media, just to grow followership. Some could be based on some economic interests. Monies have changed hands. So some influencers have been directed as to some content to push out there. And again, you wouldn't want to discount the fact that politicians and governments, in trying to frame narratives and in trying to control these narratives online, are also investing in all sorts of tactics and techniques to influence online conversations. Then you would want to also highlight the international actors who have all sorts of interests in the continent and in specific countries. So they do this with the objective of either sowing seeds of discord, leading to destabilization of these countries, and then eventually they get to sell weapons to some of these countries. So there are several interests at play here. So depending on what actor is involved, we can highlight and make the public understand what is at play.
Right. Now, Roselina, coming to you, what research methodologies have proven most effective in identifying disinformation patterns?
Hi, Josie. Good afternoon. And thanks for having us here.
Pleasure.
So far, we've taken note of a number of effective methodologies in the practice. Key among them is, of course, social listening and monitoring. As you know, there are many platforms that are being used by malign actors and bad actors. And we believe that listening or monitoring social media, traditional media, of course, also in like radio stations, etc., we find a lot of claims, a lot of disinformation on those mediums. When we talk about traditional media, it is good to note that because of a lot of political affiliation of these media establishments, they tend to, of course, push agendas that are more in tune with what their mission is. And now that all parties, all different political parties have a stake in the media, we are sure to encounter a lot of misinformation on those platforms as well. And we also do a lot of network analysis to establish connections between claims or spreaders of disinformation. And we also do a lot of content analysis. As you will know, there's textual claims, there's claim in text, claim in audio, claim in video, etc. And we are also now adopting machine learning algorithms that are helping us to identify claims, etc.
So what happens next if you find that someone, or you identify the link of whoever or the pattern that someone has just spread misinformation in Ghana? What happens next, Roselina?
The first thing we typically do is to first fact check and put out the right narrative. The other end of that, which is the more unfortunate end, is that more often than not, the false narratives, go faster, way faster than the truth that we will put out. But
right.
I think it's still something that needs to be done regardless. Also, we do try to call out to name people that have been caught repeatedly disinforming, so that they are aware. And we have found that over the past few years, there are some that have come to acknowledge and correct and et cetera. So we put out active fact checks, media information literacy and explainers, and then we also call them out as well.
Right. Now, Rabiu, coming back to you, Ghana is going to be going to the polls voting very soon. And usually when it's election time, the build-up during election or even the aftermath, there's always a lot of disinformation, misinformation flying around. How is disinformation or misinformation impacting electoral process? in Africa, Ghana being a case in this point, what are the very recent patterns that the electorates should be on the lookout for?
A lot is at stake in Ghana, with increasing tension we are witnessing ahead of the December 7 elections, where for the first time we are seeing a former president contesting on the ticket of a party, whilst we also have a vice president also contesting on the other ticket. So these are the two leading contenders. We know of the violence that was recorded during the previous elections, with some deaths recorded. And the situation has not been as thoroughly resolved as possible. So it heightens the stake in the upcoming election, whilst we also know of the media ownership structure in this country and the over-reliance on advertising revenue, which has traditionally impacted mainstream media. Now, the politicians, beyond the control they have of mainstream media, are wanting to extend that control online, which feeds into their disinformation campaigns and the using of troll farms to do some of the operations that they execute online, either through inauthentic online behavior where they get young people and give them data and get them to do their bidding online. So these are the real issues, and it's feeding into the distrust, the increasing distrust that's the EC, which is the Electoral Commission, the election management body, is facing, which might potentially have an impact on the final results that would come up. There are other issues at play, and I'm sure as we continue with the discussion, they would come up as well.
Right, Rabiu, but still with you, with something that you just mentioned, that even contenders might also be fueling this whole disinformation online. So what happens then? How do you now come in as a fact checker if, let's say, candidate A just posts something or a lie or something that's not true about candidate B online? Where do you come in and how do you try to fuse all this?
Okay. So as signatories to the International Fact-Checking Network Code of Principles, where we insist on our independence and our non-partisanship, try to be as fair as possible and balanced in our reporting, we try, when we chance on some of these claims, to produce debunks, fact checks, fact sheets, to educate the public, to clarify issues and to put issues into perspective. That is what we try to do. But beyond the production of the fact checks, we try to put together narrative reports to help people better appreciate the context in which some of these information disorder is playing out. And that broader context is what we would want to encourage going forward. So beyond the eventful fact checks, people, by reading some of these reports, would appreciate the key issues that are playing out and would not fall for the misinformation and sometimes outright disinformation campaigns that are being sponsored by the actors in the elections.
Yeah. Now, as you're still trying your best and keeping up on the best that you can do, Roslina, let's also explore the role of public education in fact-checking strategy.
We fact-checkers have also come to understand that beyond debunking and producing fact-checks and research, the core basis for the success of our work is for citizens and people to have the basic knowledge on how to interrogate information, right? So media information literacy has been top of our trainings to equip people with the needed skills to know what to do with information, where to source for the right kinds of information, what to do with it, and how to conduct, you know, basic fact-checking on their end as well. And the belief is that once a good number of people have that skill, the effects of disinformation would not be as pronounced as it is now. So yes, education of the public is key on the fact-checkers' agenda.
Right. Now, Rabiu, founder of a fact-check, do you call it a fact-check organization?
Yes, fact-checking organization.
Right. What prompted the formation of the Fact Checkers Coalition, and how does it differ from previous fact-checking efforts?
This coalition has been set up primarily because we feel we don't want to spread our efforts thin and get independent fact-checking organization doing the same work, whilst we can collaborate and make more impactful work and do more by leveraging the strength of numbers in doing our work. So it's based or informed largely by the impact that we would want to achieve by coming together to do this work. So we are expecting that the independent newsrooms of the three fact-checking organizations signatory to the IFCN in-country would be collapsed into one. So we work together, leveraging the skill sets and the strength in number to do this work.
Rabiu Alassane, lead fact-checker at FactSpace West Africa, and Rosalina Ahi-Able, senior researcher with Dubawa, Ghana. Many thanks for joining us. At the Africa Link podcast, we always look across the continent to see how the stories and issues we are dealing with play out or at times even overlap. Here is an explainer by my colleague George Okach on how young Africans are exposed to disinformation, what misinformation and disinformation in Africa look like, and how they impact the continent's youth.
Young Africans are the most connected generation on the continent. But like young people everywhere, they are especially vulnerable to misinformation and disinformation. Africa is seeing a meteoric rise in mobile and internet penetration rates. Some 112 million people aged between 15 and 24 in Africa are now online, and that's more than half of the youth population. Social media platforms are their main source for accessing education and consuming entertainment and socio-political information. But because social media is also where disinformation is lacking, it means Africa's youth is exposed to a lot of fake or false news. And children are especially susceptible to misinformation and disinformation. That's because they are not properly equipped to judge whether information is true or false, research finds. So, what types of disinformation are prevalent across social media platforms in Africa? Political disinformation holds a prominent position, with actors pursuing three key agendas: manipulating perceptions, influencing elections, and sowing confusion. The impact of such disinformation on youth voter turnout was notably observed during the elections in Zimbabwe in 2023. Major political parties, including ruling ZANU-PF and the opposition Citizens Coalition for Change, faced accusations of employing manipulated photos and videos. These tactics involved using doctored images from past rallies or entirely different contexts to create a false impression of overwhelming support. In another instance, a manipulated clip of opposition leader Nelson Chamisa suggested he advocated for the reversal of radical land reforms enacted by late President Robert Mugabe and wanted the land to be returned to the white farmers. WhatsApp chain messages are widely used in Zimbabwe to spread disinformation, says social media editor Lungile Ngwenya. She's extensively researched how political players use disinformation to shape public opinion and how it affected Zimbabwe's 2023 elections.
We faced a lot of electoral disinformation, and the way that it impacted on young people was them not actually turning up to vote. So not them going out to the polls to actually vote. And it really had a negative impact as a whole to us as a country.
Disinformation is also being used in other ways. On the other end of the continent, in Nigeria, for example, it's fueling community and religious tensions. Flourish Chukura, in charge of TikTok account of DW's News Lagos, has covered conflicts related to ethnicity in Nigeria's north. She often encounters disinformation that creates false narratives around the idea of ethnicity. It's designed to create animosity between different communities.
There has been an ongoing tension between the Christians and the Muslims in the north. And so any news that you bring up, or any news that, any fake news site that wants to, you know, get clicks, would probably say that a particular group of Muslims killed a particular group of Christians. And immediately that would be like it will have a rapid fire effect because people are passionate about their religion and they want to defend their religion. And so fake news sites use stories like this to deepen the division that already exists in our society.
Economic scams targeting unsuspecting individuals are another form of disinformation affecting young people.
Young people who still go on social media to find out about different school opportunities that they might get. They might also find a job. They might also be looking for job opportunities as they are young people. But when they go online, you find that they'll be misled. And when they are misled by the, whether is it an advert or it's a poster talking about some particular school or some particular job opportunity, they are misled. And that's when you find that they fall victim to a lot of scammers.
The rapid expansion of the digital landscape in Africa is amplifying these damaging forms of content. So why is this information so attractive to young people? Nyakirario Omari is a Kenyan-based facts checker. She's carried out numerous research on how disinformation is used on social media.
Disinformation elicits some type of emotion to social media users, and that is why it travels faster than true information does.
With close to 400 million Africans of all ages on social media, state and non-state actors have ramped up efforts to exploit platforms for ulterior motives. Africa's most used social media platform is WhatsApp, and it has become a swamp of disinformation.
There are so many chain messages that are circulated on WhatsApp, and because of that, disinformation, it really circulates really, really fast.
TikTok, which is rising in popularity in Africa, also provides a space for spreading fake and false messages. This is especially true in Kenya and South Africa. Young people there are the world's top TikTok users, according to a report by Reuters Institute Digital News. In Kenya, research by Mozilla Foundation revealed that disinformation spread on TikTok in the lead-up to the 2022 general elections to spread hate speech. But despite the spread of disinformation, the Reuters study found that TikTok users in both Kenya and South Africa trust the platform due to its selective avoidance of stories deemed depressing or anxiety provoking. The absence of strong regulations has allowed disseminators of disinformation to capitalize on platforms' influence. And Mozilla's research reveals that the disinformation being spread on TikTok violates the platform's very own policies. Lungile Ngwenya gives the example of a fraudulent doctor in South Africa who used TikTok to share medical advice and sell medication. He accumulated a large following despite not having a medical degree.
Well, his name was Dr. Matthew. And, you know, that's just one example of how he's a young person and he's impersonating himself as a doctor. He's giving medical advice to his audience, and mostly probably those are young people. So you find that having such influencers on social media platforms, it really impacts a lot on young people because they'll be thinking that they're getting accurate information or credible information from someone who's almost their peer because they believe in him and they think that he's doing a good job or he's a good doctor. But then this person is actually a liar.
Investing in media and information literacy and building societal resilience is also crucial.
I think journalists have a very big role to play when it comes to combating fake news. It's the role of journalists to ensure that they verify whatever information that comes across before they share. And so once a journalist receives an alert of a particular information or news or something that has happened, it is the job of the journalist to do the extra work that is needed to ensure that that news is not fake.
After all, most young Africans want more democratic and accountable governments and institutions than they are getting. And disinformation on social media adds even more to youth distrust of key social institutions.
Many thanks for that, DW's George Okachi. That's a wrap for this edition of Africa Link. But remember, you are not just a listener. You are a vital part of our community, and your engagement can shape the course of our discussions. Your insights are invaluable, so we encourage you to share your thoughts with us. Don't forget to follow us to catch all of the Africa Link podcast episodes. This podcast was co-produced and edited by Isaac Mugabe. My name is Josie Mahachi. Thanks for tuning in. And remember, it's not just bye for now. It's a call to action.
DW. Made for Minds.